My name is Kate Slade, and I'm interviewing Pat Payne, who lives in Great Whitley. First of all, Pat, could you tell me when you were born, what your date of birth was?
15/10/34.
So that makes you
79 this year.
Okay. Thank you for agreeing to talk to us. Perhaps we could start by asking you what your first memory of Great Whitley is.
My first memory really is walking to school from the top of Woodbury Hill.
And how far was that? It'd
be a couple of miles, I expect. And I was about 4.5 then. But there was no traffic and basically nobody about. And there was a gang of us who used to walk. And at that time I'd be the youngest, so I had plenty of people to look after me. But I was born up on top of the hill with no running water, no electricity, no toilets. And you will laugh when I tell you, but the way to bed, this was before I was born, I didn't know this, was up a straight ladder, like out of the stable. The old man, my dad, put stairs in there, obviously, and got some water, but there was no electricity or anything like that, you know. And,
do you remember when the electricity was put in?
No, we left before then. We came to live down in Lodge at the other end there. Then we moved in. We bought the two black and white houses where, what's her name, Claire Bowen lives? What was Claire Bowen, you know? We moved into there, and that's when they put the electricity there. It was in the village. It hadn't been through the village that before then, you know. They put that in, and we ran a little engine to make the electricity. The only problem was that the last one going to bed had to go outside and turn the engine off.
And going back, you said you used to walk to the school.
Yes.
Is that the same building as now?
It's bigger now than it was then, but yes, it's the same place. And I stayed there till I was 11. And then I went to Kidderminster.
What do you remember about the school? What are your kind of memories from there?
Very friendly. No real problems at all. Never saw any real problems at the school. They'd have the cane a time or two, but they told me it was to help me behave in education. But in those days, you had the cane if you did something wrong. And I had it, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 times before I went to Kidderminster. And,
were there many in your class? Remember?
In the first class, if I remember right, there were 3 classes when I first went there. The first one, there would be, I don't know, perhaps 20 there. The second class wasn't quite so big, and then there was probably about 20 or 30 in the last class, but I'm not sure of the count. But we used to get a belt in if we did something wrong, and there was nothing wrong with that, you know. And you didn't hold any animosity against the teacher. If you did something wrong, then you just accepted what, you know, what was happening. But
so what kind of things did you do wrong?
Who can tell you that? I remember during the war, we used to collect waste paper and scrap metal and that, you know, for the war effort. And I lived down at the lodge for a bit. I don't know, I was about 14, I suppose. And then moved into the black and white houses. And then moved to Ombersley, about 1952. But I remember the old man, which I shouldn't call him that, but my dad, was in partners with a chap who owned the parks here. And I remember him taking up the pipes that went to the fountain, you know. They were big cast pipes, about that big. And they smashed them with a thing I never saw before or since, with a 3-handle sledgehammer. A sledgehammer about that big with 3 handles on it. And they smashed the pipes for scrap for, you know, during the war. And I think there's still a pipe or two that they haven't taken up. But
that was the fountain at Whitley Court.
Yeah. But so I don't remember going. Dad did, but I don't remember it working, you know, because I was written down when I was about 4, you know. But and then war broke out, and the chap who owned the parks, Kendrick, came from up your way, a chain maker. And he stopped the old man one day and said, would he come and work the ground, you know, and have half the profits? And the old man said, no, I should want a good wage and half the profits because I might not make any. Because a lot of it was fern and tree roots and all sorts, you know. But then we stayed there for a bit, and we moved to the as I said, the black and white houses. Stayed there till I was about 17, I think, when we lived there. And then we went to Ombersley for a few years.
So during the war, did you stay in the village? You didn't move away?
No, I stayed in the village, and we had an evacuee, and a young lad out of London, and he stayed with us. And I think there was two brothers, one went to Abley Hall and the one came with us. And he got so attached to the country that he cried his eyes up when he had to go back home after the war, you know. And,
did you keep in touch with him at all?
Pardon?
Did the family keep in touch with him or he with you?
Yes, for some time, but... I don't know what happened. There was no trouble, no arguments, no nothing, you know. But, he had to go back. I think it was East Ham he came from. And I don't know whether there is an East Ham now. I know there's a West Ham, but, you know. But we used to have wonderful times for kids because there's no roads through the top of the hill there and there was no traffic. And we used to wander for days on end. Catapults, birds' nests, and all sorts of things, you know. And there was maybe half a dozen of us up there, I suppose, you know, kids of different ages.
So you'd spend your holidays up there?
Yeah, we used to go to a little village where my uncle came from, because we're related to Owens, Di Owen, Bernard Owen. And Bernard's father came from a little village in Wales called... Well, not far from Pendine, and we used to go there. But of course, during the war, you couldn't go anywhere, you know. And but after the war, we went. We used to go down to Pendine quite a lot. But I don't think I've been on holiday for many years. The last holiday I had was about, I'm getting towards 20 years ago. It was about 3 days. We went at my wife was alive then, and we went basically through Wales in about 3 days and back home. But
so you had family holidays, did you?
Yes, when we went, we would often go with Owens, and there'd be, you know, quite a lot of us. We had another relation up there then on the hill as well. And there'd be 20 or perhaps 25 of us, you know. But when we first went to Pendine, there was absolutely nothing there, you know. There was, I think there was two coaches on the sand dunes there. And we took the two coaches and a tent. And that's what we had to make our holiday. Because, you know, after the war, there was nothing, basically. It was all right. We enjoyed ourselves, so.
So when you were saying you were given quite a lot of freedom to play when you were
yeah,
here.
Yes.
You know. So did you go out with your brother or your friends? Or
we didn't go out in those days. When I say we didn't go out, it was very, very little. You know, we would play amongst ourselves on the hill. And several reasons, one being that we hadn't got any money, but that didn't help. Later on, you know, we used to go out. The main thing in Great Whitley then, there would be a whist drive or something like that, and we'd go there because there was basically nothing else. You just made your own entertainment, really.
So would children go to the whist drive?
No, not until you were sort of, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, something like that.
Yeah.
And then about once or twice a year, we would have a whist drive and a social. And I don't know, did you ever see the old village hall before they built the new one? It wasn't much. And it was perishing cold.
Do you remember who ran the whist drive?
There was an old boy who lived in the Glebe, or not in the Glebe, in the council house the other side, Bob Millward. And he used to run most of them. You knew everybody. And there would be, I don't know, perhaps 20, 30, something like that.
Was there a prize?
Yes, we used to have prizes and refreshments at half time. Then again, as I said, there was no entertainment. Only Worcester was the nearest to Stourport. And there was a bus twice a day, something like that. Nothing else.
Were you involved at all with the church in Great Whitley? Did your family go to the church?
We used to go to church most Sunday nights. I'm not saying it was altogether religious, but as we got older, we didn't walk off the hill to the church. But we used to, when we lived in the village, we used to go there most Sunday nights. And I suppose it was a way, to be honest, of meeting the girls. The lads and the girls used to go there, and we were always in later times, when I suppose I'd be 13, 14, 15. We were always in some sort of trouble. Nothing desperate, but...
What kind of thing?
Well, just the usual kids' tricks, basically. No damage or anything like that. But we did have a few spills. I remember one of the lads putting an apple through the schoolmaster's window. And that wasn't intentional. He threw it at the bottom of the door and missed it. It was two big panes of glass. He took one of them out. Even then, you know, before I left Whitley, there was dances, but they were at Aberley. But we would walk from down the Worcester Road here to Aberley, come back 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. But there would be a gang of us, you know, walking. And so we were fairly safe, I suppose.
And did you meet your wife through one of the...
No, I met June at in Ombersley, because basically... We met when my sister married her brother. In actual fact, he died about 12 months, 2 years ago. They live at Ombersley. They got the farm that we had. We bought the farm at Ombersley, and then we sold it to Lord Sands. And when we came away, then we moved back to Dunley. When I was about, I'd be married then, and I got, I don't know, 2 or 3 kids. That's how we actually met, and she was at college in Yorkshire, and I was frankly too busy to do a lot of courting, so it suited me. She came home about every month or something like that, and then she'd come home all through the holidays, and she was going to teach PE and English. We hadn't been married very long, about 12 months, when we started breeding, and that was the end of all her schoolwork. But she would never have made a good school teacher; it was too soft.
You said earlier you went to Kidderminster School.
Yes.
How did you get there?
On the bus. It used to come from about Menith Wood. It'd come night and morning, and the kids going to the grammar school and the high school would go in for nothing. And I think it was about 10 pence old money if you wanted a grown up to go, you know. Yeah, they used to pick us up at about 8:30. And then it used to pick us up in Kiddy at about 4:05.
And what was that? Was that very different from being a village school?
Yes, it was in many ways. It was obviously bigger. I don't know, there were about 400 there or something like that. We had to do things that we never did in the village school, you know. We had to keep our books going and all that sort of thing, you know. But it was all right, and I enjoyed it. But I couldn't get from there fast enough, to be quite honest, because I never wanted to work inside. I couldn't work in an office. The old headmaster was a cracking chap. He said, "Are you going on pain?" And I said, "No, sir." No, he said, "I wish you'd have gone on." There was no point in me going on because I wanted to come on the farm. That was a soft job. I should never have done something like that. But I enjoyed every bit of it, and I have since. I've got no regrets in that respect.
So how old were you when you left school?
Well, I should have been there until I was 16, but I left when I was 15 because my birthday was sort of on the leaving time, and I wasn't that successful, but I think it was 6 GCSEs. I didn't really try or want any, you know. It wouldn't have mattered if I hadn't done any exams. I didn't want the job. And
So where was your dad? Was your dad here there?
Yes, he was farming this, a lot of what we farm now.
What kind of farming was it?
It was pretty well all arable. It was, I think it was the bottom end he used to farm, up to what we call the, what, do you know the washing pool? There's a pool, a biggish pool up in the middle of the farm. And the old boy who bought it, he paid £10 an acre for it. And £8 from the washing pool up to the Martley Road. You know, it seems a bit ridiculous now, doesn't it? It's £10,000 an acre now.
So your dad worked that farm and you joined him?
I didn't join him here because I wasn't old enough. My brother did. And then my brother...
Where did you go?
Well, I was still at school till I was... Till 1952.
Right.
And... the old man had a few words with Kendrick. They parted because basically the old man was a bit quick-tempered if somebody upset him. I think he got one or two sons a bit the same. Then we moved to Ombersley. We used to be the contractor in the village here. And we stayed there till about, I don't know, for about 8 or 9 years, I suppose. And we came back to Wordley Farm at Dunley and onto the Cranes estate. And we bought this end of the farm. There was nothing at all here. There was one building and we put the houses up. We put 5 houses up and about an acre of buildings, you know. We've got our own little village here now. We've got 3 of the lads who work for us in the cottages there.
And what do you farm now? Is it the same or has that changed over the years?
It's changed all right. It's changed dramatically, really. But we actually farm about 2,800 acres now. They've seen us going down there. We go to Frank Caldwell's and most of the farmers anyway, we take land off to grow potatoes. We grow 500 or 600 acres, I suppose, you know. And we do corn. We used to do quite a bit of stock, but we've steered clear of it because of this new disease they've got. It's Schmallenberg, is it, or something? And the lambs and calves are born with their legs all twisted and all this. And it just isn't worth the risk. But Alan's now got a lad. He's got 2 lads, and the first one has just come back from university and he's very interested in stock, so we won't go in for breeding again, I don't think, not until they've got that cleared up. But we will go back into stock.
So you grow potatoes, what else?
We grow quite a lot of corn. We've got 1,400 acres of corn, I think 1,500 acres,
what
somewhere.
Where did that go to?
We store what we can here, now we just put a new building up, we're going to put another one up this time. We just sell it to anybody, basically, you know. We've had to store away from home quite a lot. And, you know, it's an expensive job because there's £25,000 a year to store about half of it, you know.
When you started, were you growing the same kind of things, or...?
Not really, because we used to do quite a bit of stock. When we went to Ombersley first, we used to milk. And then we started doing market gardening. It paid better than the milking, so we stopped milking and expanded the market garden. And it went very well. So we had a few problems with the taxman, to be quite honest, and we used to employ a lot of gypsies. And of course, they never signed for their money, so he said we didn't pay them. So we said, well, you better pay them from now on. So we stopped the lot, cut out the market garden, and we haven't done any since. But we do quite a lot of corn. We go right down Larford, you know, by the sand and gravel place at Stourport, and we got spuds this time out at Stoulton, the other side of Worcester. And,
so what do you do with all those spuds? Because you must have quite a lot of spuds there.
We've got insulated buildings for about 600 ton, I suppose. And then the rest we sell off the field and whatever, you know. It has been very difficult this year. It's been a very difficult year. And still is.
So what, in terms of you've been farming now for, what, 60-odd years?
Yeah.
What have been the main changes you've seen?
Well, there's been a lot of change, obviously, in machinery, because when I first started, we had tractors then, but when I was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, I used to come down with the old man onto the park here, and when we still lived up on the hill, and he'd work spuds and whatever with horses, you know. I often say to my kids, they've had horses all their life, I often say to them, you wouldn't know how to put a collar on them. And I don't think they would. They've had horses all their life. We've still got one now. But But not a working horse. We haven't had any working horses for years. I think the last one we had would be about, I don't know, 1956 or 7 or something like that. Totally different. Doing the milking, you sort of, the farm work around that, you know. It did take me all night to tell you everything we've done, you know. Yeah, we've worked pretty hard. And my brother, the one that's got dementia, you know, because we were always together. But now there isn't a lot of what you'd call manual work. There's nothing really, you know. It's all done by machines. You know, when we used to pull our own sugar beet, and that was, I think, the hardest job on the farm.
When you say pull your own, you...
You said lift it out of the ground, pull it.
Yeah.
Then you dropped it on the floor in rows, and then you picked it up and chopped the top off it and threw it in rooks. Then you picked it up and put it on the trailer and probably tipped it on the side of the road, you know. And it was hard work. But now, I mean, you know, the beet harvest is straight to it. And we don't grow sugar beet now because obviously the beet factory's closed. I think the nearest beet factory is something like the other side of Nottingham, so it just isn't worth it. There's been a lot of changes, small changes really, because as I said, when I left school, we just had one tractor or two tractors. We used to do a bit of contracting. We had a bit of land up the back of the cottages there. It's changed in so much that there's really no hard work to it now. And the wages are a bit different. £2 a week I started. And then the old man must have thought I was a bit better than that. He gave me £3 a week. I mean, now, in a good week, our chaps will earn £500-600. No rent to pay, you know. And anything that's on the farm, they have for nothing. It's a totally different world. But they are worth every penny. You know, they really are good.
So how many people do you employ?
We have the three lads who live on the farm here. We have one part-time lad comes from Starport. And then we've got about 6 or 8 Lithuanians, Romanians, whatever, you know.
Is that seasonal?
No, they're here all the time, and they work all the potatoes. We don't, neither of us or our chaps do anything really, except just tell them what to do. But we did start some years ago, and we got a good gang, quite a lot of them related, you know, and it makes a world of difference. We got one lad who speaks fluent English, amongst other things. He can speak one or two languages, and we had one girl here working on the spud riddle, and she could speak 4 languages, and good, you know. Very smart girl, and she said she wanted to leave and get a better job. So, to be quite honest, we took her in to do her exams and whatever in Kidderminster once, you know, every now and then when she had to do them, and she's now working in the airport in Bristol. But we've got her mother here. It was a Jew's eye, her brother, her son-in-law, her daughter. And then we moved then out of Lithuania into Romania. They're good workers, the Romanians, but they can't speak any English, and it's difficult to try and explain to somebody, because I can't speak Romanian either. It's very difficult to try and show them what to do. But this one lad, we can tell him, he knows exactly what you want to do. And we go in the morning and say, we want... Because nowadays you have to put them all in different bags, and if they complain, you don't change the sponge, you change the bags. They're all the same sponge, and you put the same sponge in another bag, and they'll accept that. We sell a lot. I suppose we must sell 5,000-7,000 tonne a year to one firm in Rugby.
What do they do with them?
Around the chip shops.
Oh,
they do 1,000 tonnes a week around the chip shops.
Really?
And they're not only at Rugby, they're at Bristol. And they're just going to start in London. But they will find a few different things when they go to London, because when we were market gardening, we drove 3 or 4 or 5 lorries going to Birmingham most days. The market that they're now shutting down, we used to go in there. Where we used to take most of it, they decided to go to London. And they weren't there long. The traffic, he said, you'd send somebody out with a van in the morning, you wouldn't see him till night. Said the traffic just blocked everything as far as they were concerned, and these lads might just find the same. They're only young chaps.
So it's interesting, because you were saying that there used to be gypsies you employed, and now you employ Lithuanians,
gypsies. But no, the Lithuanians, in fairness, they're not gypsies. They're well educated lads.
Yes, but they've come in from another place.
Yeah,
almost.
Yeah. I think the Romanians might be, but the Lithuanians, the one tall lad, as I said, who does the job mainly, he had 2 years at university before he came over. But there's no work, you know, there's no money. And I don't know what the exchange rate is now, but he said if he earned a pound a year, it was worth five in Lithuania. They go back on holiday.
And where do they live?
We got caravans in the old piggeries there. We keep having to update them for them. They keep pushing us. But they are good. We can't afford to lose them, to be good on this.
Let's go back. When you said when you were a child, really, and a young person, there wasn't much entertainment in the regions.
Nothing. As I say, there was whist drives and I used to shoot in the men's club. I think I started when I was about 14 or 15. And there was what they call the Edenham League, where about, I suppose it'd be 10 or 12 villages round about who shot in this league.
Who shot what? What did you shoot?
It was air gun shooting at targets.
Okay.
It was a nighttime job, which was about 7:30.
That was a men's thing?
It was a centre for the old men and the young lads, basically, you know, because a lot of people, when they got the sort of caught in marrying age, they seemed to sort of fade away. So it was left to the kids, as I was then. I wish I was now. quite a lot of old, you wouldn't have a Quartermans. Well, Tom Quarterman used to shoot at the same time. And it was about 10 or a dozen villages. You went there 1 week to one of the villages, and then they came to you next week or whatever.
Like a cricket match.
We never had a cricket team and we never had a football team, but they did have one at Aberley. I used to play football at Aberley when I was about 15, something like that.
But there wasn't a Whitley one?
No. In actual fact, Whitley has never really organised anything. The 100 House has never been a village pub. You know, it's always been not toffee nose, but they never sort of catered for the youths in the village who mostly went and drunk the beer, you know. They didn't.
Yeah. Was that the only pub in the village?
Yeah.
So did you use it at all or not?
No, I wasn't allowed to drink then. They only told me I used to use it. I really shouldn't tell you, but when it snowed, a gang of us used to go up there, fill our hands with snowballs, get as many as we could carry, and then the back bar, as they called it, opened out into the road. And one would go up and knock the door. And when somebody knocked the door, we used to have all the glasses off the tables. The local copper would then be on his way up. But that's a sort of, I suppose it lacked entertainment. We had to make our own, and that's how we had to do it.
But so the 100 House didn't provide any entertainment?
No. As I said, it's for sale now, and I think it could obviously be bought very cheap, I think. But you would never make it into a pub, really. You know, when I was young, not too many people went out to drink at night. And you didn't go out for meals and all that sort of thing, you know. It was a one-off job. When we lived up on the hill, nobody walked down to the pub, I can assure you. So it's never really been a country pub. And we've never had one. You see a lot of pubs round about who would be full, you know, or well attended then, but not the 100 House. They sold a sale there about every 3 months, cattle and sheep.
Actually at the 100 House?
Yeah, round the back of the 100 House there. It's to run the cattle there mostly. You know, we'd drive them off the top of the hill. Because my uncle had, it was Grandad's farm, and my uncle rented it, which was Bernard Owen's father. And he'd say, come on, give us a hand. And we'd run the cattle down and the sheep, you'd drive the sheep up the road and, you know, there was no traffic much. You wouldn't do it now.
When did they stop having sales at the
100? Oh, it's been a few years now, I think. I can't tell you exactly when, but it's been a few years. But they always had one there, as they had one at the Bell at Pensacks for years. They had a sale there. And a lot of country places, because there wasn't transport, to take them into the markets at Kitty and all that sort of place, you know. Yeah, it's been a long and interesting life. It's been a hell of a lot of hard work, I'll tell you. You're lucky if you can keep working, I think. My brother, my nephew, said to me the other day, he said, it'll be a sad day for me when you can't come out. I said, yeah, and it'll be a sad day for me. And my two girls said, yes, it'll be a sad day for us as well if you can't get out. I don't believe him. They say I'll give him a life of hell, but I don't believe him. I have spent a good, well, not a good bit of time, but a few times in hospital. And for, I should think, for 50, 60 years, I never saw a doctor.
Was there a local doctor here?
Yeah, there's always been a doctor surgery. When I was a kid, there was Walter Johnson, who was who came out of the middle of London, you know, during the war. His son then took over, and now they've got umpteen in there now, you know, there's doctors everywhere.